Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan.
Don't touch that dial. I think you are exactly where you want to be. You've landed in Juicebox Radio on CITR 101.9 FM. Or you could be one of our online listeners at CITR.ca. Don't forget, if you ever miss a show, you can download the podcast at juiceboxradio.com.
However you got to spend this hour with us, we're glad that you are here.
Tonight's show is about sex and drugs. I was going to say rock and roll.
Yeah, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I love this part. Yes, yes, you've landed in Juicebox.
We're going to be sharing with you the effects of the many illicit drugs that are used today and how they, the kind of effects they have on our sexuality, as well as some of the new ones like 2CB.
And we're going to be taking calls tonight, so feel free to call in and contribute to the conversation we're going to be having about drugs and sex.
Sounds promising.
What is that? What's the number?
It's 604-822-CITR. That's 604-UBC-CITR.
2487. 822-247.
Sorry, I was having a dyslexia moment there.
Yes. Drugs and sex. Sex and drugs. Why do they seem to go together? At least in our culture. The fact is, one of the biggest motivations for getting high or having a drink is to become less self-conscious and to feel sexier. So when we become less inhibited, our sexuality seems sort of less complicated, and sometimes it can feel more powerful. Chatting somebody up is easier, and you feel sort of more good about yourself, more confident, and social anxiety tends to disappear.
Sex and drugs, when I'm saying drugs, I am also including alcohol. It allows us to enter a different sort of headspace. We're not as distracted by the ordinary stuff that usually fills our thoughts, work, paying the bills, finding a place to live, etc. We're more focused on what's happening right now, right in the moment.
In the moment, exactly.
At the very best, this can lead to the sort of events where people talk about peak experiences, where everything just seems to kind of flow perfectly. Mm-hmm. Our ego boundaries are down. We feel connected to the guy or girl that we're hanging with or having sex with. We may even feel connected to the entire universe.
Which is kind of a common occurrence with LSD. I mean, I've heard from a lot of friends that this is what happens. So, you know, one of the problems with this kind of cosmic experiences, like with LSD, is that you can't actually order them on demand. So people who do a lot of drugs and engage in sexuality tend to end up chasing the experience longer than we should. And sometimes we work ourselves into a state where we sort of lose our sense of ourselves. We suddenly can find ourselves feeling lost, not blissful.
But a night of partying starts out as a lot of fun. But a long evening of mixing too many substances, including alcohol, can turn into something that's, well, not really that fun at all. We start chasing the people that we're chasing and eventually catch them, and then find out we're no longer up for sex, figuratively or literally.
Because, you know, honestly, many drugs increase the desire for sex, but they actually limit the ability to actually have sex because mostly of erection problems. but it also desire problems or other physical or emotional problems that happen from overdoing it. We're kind of in a different place after long hours of dancing or long hours of dancing and drugging or just drugging and hanging out. And sex can sometimes feel like something of a chore and not really like the climax of a great weekend together. Sort of like, oh, well, I guess we should have sex now. And it can almost seem like too much. You know, you sort of feel exhausted. I'm sure that sounds familiar to some of you. Drugs can affect sexuality in different ways, too. But depending on the amount taken and in which combinations can actually negatively affect user sexuality in numerous ways. So we're going to be talking tonight about that. Stimulants, cocaine, amphetamines, like crystal meth, and ecstasy. These are stimulants, and they sort of affect the central nervous system and can have a very powerful effect on especially male sexual performance. For instance, these drugs can make sex much more intense the first times they're used, and they're almost like an aphrodisiac. So a lot of stimulants, cocaine, amphetamines, crystal meth, etc., ecstasy, can act like an aphrodisiac. But with time, they have the actual opposite effect, and sexual arousal can shift, and it actually decreases. And some men find that they never get erections when using ecstasy, for a specific example, and they tend to kind of rely on Viagra to help them get it up. Or they can get aroused and they can get it up and have sex, but they never get off. So that can be frustrating for some men. And there's growing evidence that long-term use of stimulants such as cocaine, crystal meth, amphetamines, and ecstasy can cause impotence in some men.
And users of depressants, alcohol, pot, heroin, ketamine, they enjoy a sense of euphoria and sometimes a heightened sense of touch. So the connection with sexual pleasure be obvious, but depressants will also interfere with the sexual response. The most obvious target is, well, the male erection. We can use lube, which is great.
Yeah, lucky us, right? But do you notice a common theme here? Almost all drugs have the potential for interfering with erections, and erections is probably going to be one of the main topics of our night, of our discussion tonight, Caroline.
Definitely. And we like talking about getting it up.
Well, you know, and erections, you know, even at the best times, they're pretty precarious things, which is one of the reasons why Viagra has become so popular among many men that are seeking greater sexual self-confidence.
But what is the effect about combining Viagra-induced erections and chemically
disinhibited brain. So, like,
that's
basically
a good word to describe it.
Yeah, so, like, you know, when you're on drugs, you're quite disinhibited.
Because, I mean, that could kill it. I mean, if a guy tosses, you know, poppers in the straw, like, is there any real possibility between a fatal interaction between, you know, the nitrate inhalers and Viagra?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, poppers and Viagra can kill you if you combine those things. So people tend to talk about this in culture, and it tends to become, in drug culture, known information about combinations that can kill you. That kind of comes out there pretty quickly. So, you know, in drug culture, people tend to know that you don't mix Viagra and poppers or nitrate inhalers. But I think that men under the influence are much more likely to think with their dicks, and this is kind of probably the issue, is that this becomes a prescription for really risky sex. And that's the thing, is that once your inhibitions are down, especially when you're on things like crystal meth and cocaine, where you feel really quite... what's the word? Like teenagers do, you know?
Reckless, powerful.
Yeah, super powerful, like nothing's going to harm you.
Invincible.
Invincible, thank you. Thank you, a little brain fart there. I was teaching today, and I'm doing a lot of planning for teaching, and I'm pretty tired. I find that teaching really exhausts me. You have to kind of be really on and like super excited about everything and get everyone engaged in the material. Anyway. So thank you for
that. You're welcome, my darling. you should finish my sentences, and I love it.
So this effect of combining Viagra and, you know, stimulants, I think that people end up doing that because stimulants can give you like coke dick and erectile functions in a really big way. So they tend to use Viagra to help counteract that erectile dysfunction at the time of the drug use. So Anyway, I think that men using stimulants may find that the sex gets rougher than they intended because they're processing physical sensations really differently, and they're more likely to wear out a condom or run out of lube or hurt their lover in some way. And guys who know better find it easier to break their own rules about risky sex if they're enjoying the relaxing effects of their favorite substance.
But I think
even guys who know better, like even people who know better.
But I think women experience negative effects of drugs and alcohol as well, because, I mean, let's face it, it dehydrates your system. So there's got to be dryness. There's no lube and there's no saliva to work with, and there's that whole numbing effect. So there's no orgasm. So what's the point of having sex? Let's be honest about that. Well, there's a lot of reasons, but, you know, in regards to this, I mean, it's disassociation.
Orgasm, folks. Orgasm, focus.
It's all about the orgasm.
But, you know, for those of us who aren't orgasm focus, there is the dissociation.
It is. And the dependency. Mm-hmm. And that's all pretty disappointing in terms of the outcomes when, you know, all you want is just to experience a really good sex life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because we were talking, you know, earlier in the hour just now about how we take drugs and drink because we want to lower our inhibitions and enjoy ourselves more. And yet the drugs can kind of counteract this whole thing. So it's an interesting, it's really about balancing.
Mm-hmm.
Having sex when our brain chemistry is significantly altered can actually reinforce the separation you're talking about between sex and intimacy, which for men tends to be a little bit easier. They can kind of separate their heart and emotions from their sex body and from their sex brain. And that's sort of speaking generally. I talk about that because I talk about tantra and how women's we take things inside of our vagina and then we basically bring our heart center and our heart chakra comes out, the love comes out of our heart chakra, so that energy comes up from our sex chakra and in our vagina out through our heart, and that microcosmic orbit I've talked about many times on different shows, that energy system kind of comes out of our heart. So we end up feeling very attached to whomever we're being with, you know, whether it's another woman or a man. Whereas men kind of, you know, they can sort of cut themselves off a little bit more easily from that energy center that's coming out of people's chests and into their body, because they're basically extracting their energy through their cock, through their penis, and it kind of comes out there and it comes in through their hearts, and they can kind of get that energy from cosmos, from within themselves or whatever, and they're much easier to detach themselves from their heart. So I kind of speaking a little spiritually there, but...
But it's also, too, with women, too, the whole oxytocin factor where we have the cuddle thing in us, so just
a little bit
having
more
sex
than men.
In general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, men get flooded with twice as much oxytocin as women do when we have orgasms, but testosterone
tends to combat
that, exactly.
I like it. I can imagine it. Can you imagine, did you ever read that book, what's it called? Not The Joy of Sex, the one with the little sperms with the little hats on it when you're a little kid.
Oh, yeah, Where Do We Come From?
Yes, thank you. It used to be one of my favorites.
Where Do We Come From? Yeah.
The perverted sperm with the eyebrows that used to go up and down.
I don't remember.
Oh, I remember it very well, because I remember I used to laugh about it because I thought it was really funny. And I was quite disappointed the first time a guy came, and I looked at it, and I couldn't see any little hats or anything.
Oh, my God, you're so disappointed. This is the problem with sex.
I don't even do drugs, but
the common problem.
You kind of wonder sometimes. But
anyway.
But on that note, just in regards to that, I can imagine like a little sperm with little combat hats on, and they're all like going to war, combating the oxytocin.
None of this love drug. We don't believe in this stuff.
It's not the Huey Lewis. I wanted to drug. God
love.
I can't remember that
Caroline
song.
Caroline is going to be showing you later in the show.
telling
you later some perspectives of people who have experienced some both heightened closeness and increased separation from their lovers while using drugs during sex. So we're going to talk about some stories about that later in the show. But I think that this sort of alteration that happens with sex and drugs can reinforce that separation. And it's not a great idea if you already have trouble bridging these states of mind or these states of experience, but it may be a good thing for those people who are very inhibited sorts. So if you do decide to use drugs and have sex while doing it, keep in mind that too often there's a fine line between being uninhibited, which is a good thing, and being unconscious. You know? Which is not necessarily a good thing. So when we're higher stoned, we're more likely to make bad choices, is basically what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. Of sexual partners, of finding ourselves in situations without a clear understanding of how we got there, of choosing, you know, not to use safer sex practices, that kind of thing.
Just thinking that.
And I'm going to go over some of the effects of different drugs, Caroline and I will, on our sexual function, like what happens with the drugs on our sexual function, and give some guidance on how long these effects last, how you can expect to feel taking these drugs, and what these drugs may do to your sexual functioning. So I want to go over them because I think for some people who have never tried them, mm-hmm. They're afraid of trying them. And to be honest with you, I think, and research in North America, in the UK, all over Europe and Australia, suggests that actually recreational drug taking is far less harmful to people than going on a drinking binge, which seems to be happening all over, all mm-hmm. the time in these countries, in these continents. And the damage done by alcohol is actually far worse in the long term. So I'm not trying to suggest that you take recreational drugs any more so than you do drinking, but, you know, drugs are illegal. Unfortunately, the reality is that if you take the odd drug in moderation, it's a hell of a lot healthier for you than drinking like a pig, like most of us do in North America mm-hmm. and in Europe and Australia, and what it's doing to our bodies and our minds. So, you know, keeping in mind that all drugs are illegal in almost every part of the world, and if you do decide that you want to take any form of drug, then you are doing so at your own risk, both legally and health-wise. I just want people to know that, you know, I would think that alcohol probably is far more damaging than most of the party recreational drugs that we're going to be talking about on the hour. So tonight we're going to be talking about probably the most common party drugs, the most common recreational drugs that are routinely taken, and the effects that they have on sexuality.
Can we start with ecstasy, since that seems to be one of the most common ones?
Mm-hmm.
E or MDMA. And I'd say that's probably one of the most common recreational drugs taken at dance parties. I remember hearing about it originally in the early 1900s as a diet supplement. And it was routinely given to people suffering from depression and marriage problems until it was banned.
And it's interesting because it actually adds to depression. It makes you feel really great at the time, but it was definitely created for marriage counseling and to help people deal with their relationships, because it's very much a truth serum. What happens when you take ecstasy is that you become so euphoric and lightheaded. It's almost like you have no cares in the world, and you sort of feel this like a tremendous amount of love and mm-hmm. compassion for the world around you. And it's a beautiful feeling, and it makes you very honest. So you end up talking to your lover or your boyfriend or girlfriend about everything that's been bothering you for so, so long or whatever. So that's one of the reasons it was created, was to help people with relationship issues.
Mm-hmm.
So because it really helps you just not only discuss things, but to feel compassion for each other as you do that. So it's sort of known as the love drug. People on it love everyone, and they express this verbally and physically very easily.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when you take it?
Well, it usually lasts between 30 to 45 minutes for the effects to start.
Yeah, up to an hour and a half. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's true, because I know when we've gone out with friends that have done it, we've been waiting for ages where it's like, they're like, oh, I don't feel
anything.
I don't feel anything. And then before you know it, you're lying in the middle of a dance floor listening to music. One of them's got, well, I've had this where I've had my head in one of their laps. Somebody else has one arm and a shoulder. Somebody else has it, because all they want to do is touch and stroke. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And somebody else has a foot. I felt like a big starfish. I didn't need to eat, because all I needed to do was be touched and totally like massaged to death. But
I think the most intense part of that euphoric
high
lasts like it only lasts an hour or so, maybe a couple of hours, where you kind of have these peaks, although you continue to feel energetic for many hours afterwards, and that's part of the stimulant aspect of MDMA. The total time of being high, I think, would last between 3 to 6 hours, depending on the purity of the pill, but also how many times you take it. So if you take it every weekend, it's going to be different. You're going to need more of it. It's going to last less long. If it's your first time in like months or your first time ever, you're going to be feeling it a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. And it can cause a lot of side effects as well, including dehydration from the drug itself, and from sweat lost while dancing. And it can also cause major depression from coming down from days afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any pre-existing mental health problems, it can make things much worse. One of the biggest ones, common side effects of E, is combining it with the teeth grinding, which can be alleviated by chewing gum or sucking on a lollipop, which you see the ravers if you go go back to all the circa 1990 type of things, always having the pictures with the lollipop in their mouth, because that helps lubricate the mouth, which can become increasingly incredibly dry. And oral and other sensations can be heightened during the high of E.
And I think that those oral sensations, I mean, that's part of why sex becomes so much more pleasurable and exciting, like you're talking about, Caroline, with the touch and stuff. And, you know, I think ecstasy, I don't know, I think that addiction to ecstasy is very rare. It can happen, but it's sort of more that you want, you're looking for that euphoria. Mm-hmm. And but it's not like actually physically addictive, mm-hmm. like other stimulants are, like crystal meth is, like cocaine is highly addictive, heroin, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But it can become a little addictive, just that you want to get back to that feeling, but not physically addictive like other drugs can be. But the more you take it, the more often you're going to need to get, like, you're going to have to double and triple the dose, and it gets to be a bit expensive. The long-term side effects of E are unknown, but there's some research that long-term use can cause memory problems, and it can induce psychosis in people, and that's probably from the serotonin, emptying serotonin out from your brain too much. Just as a recommendation to take 5-HTP, go to your pharmacy or your health food store and get some 5-HTP or tryptophan, and dose up on that after you've taken MDMA, for sure, to help you get back to a level of serotonin in your brain that will be healthy and natural. So MDMA is actually not a natural substance, and so it is toxic to your body. Like most drugs that you take, such as antibiotics, MDMA is can be potentially toxic. And I want to caution you, especially, not to drink when taking ecstasy. The combination can be dangerous, and it negates each other anyways, because ecstasy is a stimulant and alcohol is a depressant. So you're kind of be messed up, you know, but not necessarily in a good way, and you're kind of negating the highs and lows, so not necessarily.
E affects sexuality in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Many people find it increases to self-confidence and a sense of connection with others. People just want to touch. It can make sex feel, I don't know, what would the word be?
Incandescent.
I think that would be a really good way to describe it, where you can't tell where one person ends and where the other person begins. Just that blend.
Very well put. But like crystal meth or cocaine, which we're going to go over in a minute, ecstasy is a stimulant that accelerates the central nervous system. But depending on the amount taken, it can also make users feel kind of panicky or anxious and not really in the mood for sex.
Mm-hmm.
So sexual performance can be decreased actually when on ecstasy. And although E can make sex much more intense, definitely the first few times it's used, it's almost like I was saying an aphrodisiac. But with time, ecstasy and the other stimulants we're going to mention have the opposite effects, and that arousal shifts and it actually decreases. And that some men, I think most men that I've known, find that they never get erections when they're using ecstasy. They can get aroused, or even sometimes if they can get an erection, they get very aroused, but they can never get off. So if that's something you want to do in your sex life, you want to get aroused. You want to get off. Either.
It definitely works the confidence level, because I've had male friends who've told me that it just makes them feel like they're $1 million and they look down and they've got like a shriveled up little wiener. Did I just call a penis a wiener? I did, and I did that on air. Please, just pretend you didn't hear that on the podcast.
All right, so we're going to go quickly through the speed and the cocaine, because we're having way too much fun on this sex and drug show. So speed, crystal meth, ice, crank are all amphetamines, and they work in similar ways. Crystal meth is a methamphetamine, and it's one of the strongest stimulants available. Very dangerous drug. I really highly recommend that you take this one with huge caution. I don't think you should take it at all, in my personal opinion. It can keep you going days from one dose. One of the things that I find very frightening about crystal meth is that, you know, it disinhibits people so that they do and say things without any regard for their personal safety or their consequences of their personal safety. People are taking crystal meth and doing all kinds of sex acts that they would normally never do, because you feel so invincible on this drug, much more so than even cocaine. Originally, it was used by truckers and bikers to stay awake for a long period of time, and then it was made very popular in gay clubs in the 80s and 90s. It's been linked to increased incidence of HIV all over the planet. It's really a very frightening drug. super cheap, lasts for days. People, if you start using it, you have these incredibly horrible come downs. You can feel like hell. Hallucinations happen after coming down, but also pretty much like you basically stay up for days and days. So you start, any human body, when you stay up for days and days, you start to hallucinate. Your body, your mind is no longer salient and able to handle the information that's coming in. So overuse of it can bring on paranoia. I've actually seen friends of mine go from being meth heads to being actually completely and totally psycho. Where they've actually had to be put into, you know, homes. They're never the same. They're never the same. And these people have not recovered. And so it's really, for me, I think it can it frightens me so much because it is known that people that are meth heads can be permanently psychologically and physically damaged from heavy use. And it is incredibly addictive.
It's
incredibly addictive.
A lot of the street drugs are cut with meth as well these days. So a lot of the homeless people, well, they like using it as well because it keeps them up, as you mentioned, with the truckers.
At night, so they can be safe at night.
Exactly, because if they fall asleep, somebody might roll them and steal their money or do worse to them, their life.
So sexuality and speed, I just want to speak about that really briefly before I move to cocaine in the last little bit before the break. You know, sexuality and speed, it mixes well, which is part of the reason why people started taking it too, because it basically not only releases your inhibitions, but it can intensify erections, and it can actually intensify your sexual experience in general in the first little bits of it. You know, you take a little bit, whatever. It can make for a very quick, hard lay. You know, like people fuck really hard on it and you can go for like a long time and you're super turned on and it's very, you know, it works that way. But over time, it actually does create impotence and it can make your erection not work and make you kind of crazy so you don't actually want to have sex because you're feeling like a nut bar. Like you're jumping all over the place, and I've seen people on this stuff and it's really, really scary. Anyway, all right, the last of the stimulants that we're going to cover tonight, there's quite a few, but we're going to cover cocaine quickly because, again, it's the most popular ones, the ones that are being used all the time.
And the scary thing is it's been around for thousands of years. It's been made for leaves of the cocoa plant. The North American Indians even used to use to chew the leaves to get a high, and they've been doing that for over 5,000 years. Cocaine's a stimulant which increases your energy, and it can last anywhere from 15 to 60 minutes.
Not very long.
Nope, but it's usually found in a white powder form that is used as an anesthetic originally, and was also used as in the original Coca-Cola. Coke is it, but mostly it's snorted these days instead of drank. It's highly addictive.
Say hello to my little friend. It is highly addictive, and it has very nasty side effects.
It makes us feel confident, and it brings on feelings of heightened wonder and self-importance. And as it enters the bloodstream, it can cause a rush or a high as it spreads to the body, producing a mild numbing effect and the general feeling of excitement. And this happens so quickly, but it doesn't last long, and it's going to subside quickly. But the addiction is scary because if you use it regularly, you're going to need more and more of the stuff to get the same high. And because it's an appetite suppressant, this is why a lot of supermodels used to love it.
They still do.
That and heroin. Coke makes them very vulnerable to malnutrition, and like all stimulants, it can lead to heart problems and impotence. And a lot of people snort a line and then jump into bed. But anything more than a line, and most guys will. Kat, I love that expression you came up with. I don't know if you just
the coke dick.
It's so good.
It's an issue.
And you know, even if they're totally hot and they can't get it up, it's pretty hardcore.
Well, yeah, you can be laying beside the most exciting sex partner you've ever seen in your life, and you get coked it because you've been taking too much coke. So interesting, you know, I've heard of friends, you know, they snort a line off of someone's hard cock or like the ass or whatever, and they take a line and then you fuck like mad, and it can be a lot of fun. But if you take, you know, if you take more than that, it's not going to work. So that, and you know, it's a stupid drug. It's so expensive. It's like, I think that people that take cocaine, I feel quite sad for them because they do it regularly and it costs so much money. Like, it's crazy. I mean, not that, you know, drinking doesn't cost a lot of money, but if you're going to choose one, that's a really expensive one.
It's a hugely expensive one. I mean, we grew up with people who did it all the time.
I know. I remember someone in high school, he had all these coke sores and, like, crack sores and
coke
stuff.
Bugs.
Yeah. Anyway, let's not talk about that part.
We should take a short break.
We're talking about sex. We're supposed to be talking about sex. So we're going to be coming back and talking about depressants, Special K, ketamine, we're going to be talking about GHB, Viagra. And there's some stories. We're going to be talking about some collection of stories of people that have had sexual experiences on different drugs and love it, hate it. So stay tuned. We will be back. And we welcome your calls during this time, especially
if you've had an experience.
Yeah.
So we'd be very curious to hear them, whether it's, gay, straight, whatever. We want to hear it all. So give us a call, 604-822-2487. That's 604-CITR. We'll be right back.
You're in Juice Box, and that's featured on Vancouver CITR, 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Yeah. It went to sleep. I hate this thing. It's like, my God, don't go to sleep on me. No, it's just, I don't know why.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Okay. Listener discretion is advised.
That was a really bad song by the Wet Spots.
I know.
I picked it because I thought, well, sweaty and stinky, because this is what happens when you take a lot of drugs. You can get sweaty and very stinky.
But you know
what?
You
kind of like smell weird because you're like on drugs.
Oh, I remember one time we were at Bikram Yoga and somebody had been doing ecstasy over the weekend and you could smell the ammonia coming out of her pores. It was just disgusting.
Anyway, I think that was from Hello Kinky, The Wet Spots. This is a really good album. That particular song wasn't so good.
We'll just skip over that one. I can't believe nobody called in.
Well, it's a heavy topic.
That's true.
All right, so we're back and talking about sex and drug use, and we sort of covered the stimulants in the first half of the hour and their effect on your sexual experience. Basically, impotence, okay? Dryness, yeah, impotence. And the old dryness, luckily women can just use some lube, just slap the lube on there and can still work it to go. But your mouth, like you can constantly be drinking water and this still doesn't help. Anyway, let's get to the more commonly used drugs, which are depressants. People use depressants way more so than they use stimulants, like alcohol, like pot. Those are two of the main depressants, ones that we use constantly in society, especially in Canada.
Yeah, we do.
But what are the harder ones? Yeah, so Special K, ketamine, is one of the most powerful tranquilizers and anesthetics that we know that are still used in many parts of the world. To put out a horse, for example. K is a depressant which acts on the central nervous system and can have very varied effects on different people. And some people say they get an initial rush from it, while others say it just mellows them out completely. But the effects of K are very varied. Very varied. Usually can cause this crazy drowsiness and you kind of lose control of your body. And you kind of want to sit down or lie down. It can cause unconsciousness and even death, actually.
Isn't this the date rape drug?
No, that's GHB. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And it's also Rohypnol. GHB and Rohypnol are both date rape drugs. K, you could probably date rape somebody, I suppose. But, yeah, maybe you could, I guess. Why not? Because basically they're going to pass right out. I mean, sometimes it can cause a state of paralysis for a lot of people. It basically blocks pain. And depending on the kind of strength you have, the type of experience you're going to have, it can start to act in 5 to 10 minutes. Okay, sorry. Initially, I'm feeling this numbness. Numbness comes over the body and sort of looking in on things. And it's just, you kind of, your body goes through this progressive feeling of like, if you're out on the dance floor, the music sounds really heavy and weird and kind of strangely compelling. The lights can seem really intense and your physical coordination basically falls apart slowly. And then you can, like, you could perhaps go into a K-hole, make you feel very unwell. You can throw up and pass out and whatever. If you don't take very much of it, then it's very, you know, body numbing and it can, you know, make you really fuzzed out and feel kind of euphoric in some ways. One of the cautions I have for ketamine definitely is do not mix this drug with any of the others because there's so many interactions with ketamine and other drugs, including alcohol, that can be fatal. If you're going to take it, do it with a friend who knows that you're doing it, who's relatively drug-free or sober, and can monitor you and get help if need be, because Special K or ketamine are particularly powerful and can kind of put you out into a K-hole. So the long-term effects are, they actually don't know. No one knows of any long-term effects of ketamine, so it's not necessarily a bad drug in that way as far as, like, you know, crystal meth, which has horrible long-term effects. And it's not physically addictive.
But it is habit-forming.
Because, again, you're sort of looking for that peak experience, right?
GHB.
Now, that's a really scary one. They can call that one grievous bodily harm. Sometimes they refer to that one.
Really?
It's a very scary drug. In some ways, it's very scary. In other ways, it's a great drug because it actually has no long-term side effects. It's actually not unhealthy for your body at all. It's actually not even toxic for your body because it's an amino acid that exists already in your body.
Didn't they used to use this as a steroid that used to sell in health food stores to bodybuilders to increase their body mass and decrease fat?
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
But there's deadly side effects as far as, like, GHB's been linked to many deaths because it actually stops your heart if you take too much of it. Like, it slows your heart right down and it will kill you, like, really fast. So it's become, especially if you use it with other drugs or alcohol, GHB is especially dangerous.
That does not sound like one you want to use for a drug orgy, hey?
Well, the thing about GHB is that it is actually probably one of the greatest aphrodisiacs out there.
Really?
If you want to start an orgy, you just dose everybody a little bit with GHB and pretty much sex is going to start. If for some reason it acts on some part of the brain that really gets the sex, feelings of wanting to have sex, desire, erection, you know, lubrication, just overall aphrodisiac. Mm-hmm. This particular drug is very strong that way. It is a great orgy drug if you want to get one started. It's just really dangerous if the dose is too high or if people have been drinking. So everyone has a different dose level needed. I would say err on the side of caution.
Do this drug with alcohol.
Definitely
or
don't
any
do
other
it.
Types of
yeah.
drugs.
Yeah.
But what about sex-specific drugs like Viagra, say?
I don't know.
Because that's kind of a party favorite one these days, especially by the gay scene. Mm-hmm. My brother's gay in a lot of his circle. I'm not mentioning any names, but since that release, it's been very popular. And
that's because they're taking it with things like crystal meth or MDMA or ecstasy and things where you have the coke dick, you have the E dick or whatever, and you can't get it up, and you wanna fuck, or if you've been doing a lot of meth, after a while of doing meth, you can't get it up either. So Viagra helps you to have all these feelings of like euphoria and numbness and fun and lowered inhibitions, and yet you can still get a hard on. So not surprising that Viagra has become so huge in the gay scene. I'm not surprised to hear that.
Really?
Yeah. So Viagra is usually found in a pill form, just in case you don't know that. You can get it online, but it's basically dubious. You don't know what you're getting online. You can get it from people on the streets and in clubs. I would recommend that you know what Viagra looks like. It's got like a little, it's sort of an oblong shape with, it's blue with a V stamped in it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people can make these things really easily, though. They can make a drug look just like that. So just be very careful. It basically, how it works is it decreases the flow of blood and releases certain gases and enzymes in your erectile tissue, specifically causes your penis to swell. Essentially, it does the same thing as drugs like amyl nitrate, which we were talking about earlier, like poppers. It gives you a rush, and you can get a hard-on, or even clitoral hardening can happen, and they can stay for hours and hours. It's especially effective on the penile tissue, so men actually get a spontaneous and lasting erection, which can be great for most penis lovers' sex lives, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of side effects with Viagra, though. These vasorestrictive effects of the drug, which means lowering of the blood pressure in general, restriction of the artery walls. Both of these can cause heart attacks and death. So if you have a pre-existing heart condition, beware. Interesting, another side effect is this sort of slight blue-green tinge that happens to the whites of your eyes.
Oh.
And the makers of the drug, the pharmaceuticals, are unsure about the long-term damage to your eyes as well. And this is a little scary. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but on the genital sides of things, on the eye side of things and the heart side of things, it seems a little bit unnerving. On the genital side, a side effect, you can have an erection that lasts up to 6 hours.
Oh, that'd be painful to walk or to dance or anything.
For sure.
Loss of sensation, other nasty problems. That'd be really scary.
It is. It can be very painful. So I think, with Viagra, I would be careful. There's another one called Cialis now, which is a little bit more of a gentle gentle version. Basically, with Cialis, you have to be aroused, so it sort of involves your mind a little bit. Viagra kind of works beyond your mind. It kind of just works on the penis itself. Cialis works on the penis, but it sort of needs to have your mind involved as well. So you need to be aroused, but it helps you get great erections when you're on drugs, especially. It can last for up to 3 days. So basically, you can have these erections and they can go away, whereas with Viagra, you get this major stiffy for six hours kind of thing. With Cialis, it can last for up to 3 days. So if you're planning on doing kind of a whole weekend thing where you're going to be partying and you don't know what's going to be happening, but you want to take it on a Friday night and it lasts you till Sunday, helps you kind of get it up when you've been taking some drugs or drinking a lot or whatever, and you want to make sure that you're going to be performing over the weekend. Cialis is a little bit less dangerous, I think, in a lot of ways than Viagra is. Speaking of aphrodisiacs, I think one of the newer drugs available is called 2CB or Erox, and it's commonly referred to Erox, E-R-O-X, and it's a highly hallucinogenic substance. It produces very marked visuals, kind of like LSD and other intensified perceptions. But unlike many drugs out there, 2CB or Erox has sexually enhancing effects both in men and women, and it's sold as a powerful aphrodisiac. So 2CB is kind of hard to find. It's a rare one. The trip lasts about 3 to 6 hours. I would say I would say that the drug is more potent than MDMA is, mm-hmm. and you need a lot less of it. So a great care should be taken at dosing, as too high a dose can cause very intense psychedelic reactions that can be very frightening, especially to unexperienced users, like kind of like you're on LSD at the height of like a 3-tab LSD trip where you're hallucinating pretty heavy and there's not much you can kind of do for an hour or so until you can kind of come down off of mm-hmm. the drug. So be careful with 2CB. Take it, maybe not necessarily out and partying. And then make sure that there's somebody there that can sort of help you bring your effect under control by sympathetic handling, so talking you down. There's several drug support things online that if you're going to take a new drug that you haven't tried before and you're worried about needing to be talked down from anything that might have happened or whatever, Google online. I'm trying to remember the name of this one. Mm. It's like Party Safe or... I can't remember.
I keep thinking NA, but I know that's not what we're talking about.
No, so. This is like people that understand that there's people that take drugs and that you want
to do it safely.
Yeah, using psychedelic drugs when you don't feel well.
It's probably not
and you're
a
not
smart
feeling
idea.
You're not feeling happy, increases that risk of bad experiences. So, and if you have psychiatric disorders or epileptic disorders or blood circulation issues, be careful when using psychedelics like 2CB and LSD and things like that. So, Caroline, I think you found some collections of people's experiences of sex on drugs. Did you want to read one? I want to read a few before we finish the hour.
Let's
I think it'll be
that.
Good.
I've got one from somebody named Zelda. I really only use drugs for enjoying sex more, and sex is the one thing I can manage when I'm stoned. My partner is far more experienced than me on psychedelics, so I always feel safe with him, apart from when the rare occasion makes him limp or weed sends him on his own dream world. He's always a raging bull. The combination of his renewed enthusiasm, tossing aside any inhibitions, eagerness for exploration, and unstoppable drive with my own heightened sexuality and sensitivity and wild abandon leads for more intense sexual experience. Marijuana makes the inside of my cunt more sensitive, so I can feel the dick with an exquisite sensitivity approaching what I suppose the men's glands feel. It helps me focus in on what's going on, so it becomes the center of my existence. I used to love screwing and playing around on E, but in the past few years I've decided that E only works with a new lover that you're hoping to get close to. With a steady partner, I find that interesting considering E used to be prescribed for marriage and making things better there. With a steady partner, it can leave us sitting, holding hands, making lists of all the erotic things we'd like to do. E on LSD blasts me beyond that, but I prefer acid on its own for the crazy sex that I'm bound to end up in. It's great to see everything that you're about your lover in microscopic detail and feel what he's doing in the same way. When it's good, obviously bad sex on acid will be a million times worse. I found coke brings energy and sensitivity to sex and numbs anything that might have put me off. For example, a sore scar, midget bites.
A sore
bites.
Scar? Or midge bites?
Midge bites. What the fuck Whoa. Is a midge bite? What is a midge bite?
I don't know. Bed bugs?
Oh, that's not
this
even
is
good.
Nasty.
They run rampant in the downtown east side. I've also noticed that coke makes me feel less inhibited and if I want to pee on my lover.
Pee on your lover.
Sex on ketamine. Did we get... I can't remember if we got these from Savage Love. Sex on ketamine is really funny and not really erotic. More like a cartoon within a cozy cocoon. Numb fingers and mouth sucking away on his limpy, dinky, linky, linky. Stinky.
This woman's had a lot of experience.
The dreamy qualities of magic mushrooms. Hello, Alice. Add a mystic and somewhat magical quality to sex. They make me feel softer and more loving.
Interesting. I think that she's had a lot of experience. What does Willie say? Willie's like...
I love the name Willie.
Cannabis, my favorite, tends to promote a languid sensuality conductive to long hours of varied pleasures. It can be socially inhibiting, perhaps creating fear, anxiety, alienation, or paranoia. So it's generally less efficient than alcohol as a loosener between two people with no previous intimacy. That's a good point. Mm. It tends to become a different proposition with somebody who's known and trusted, where there's already confidence and compatibility. As a fan of Taoist sexual practices, I enjoy a lot of sex without ejaculation and have found dope to be a perfect refresher, stimulating imagination as well as physical pleasure. When using it alone, I found myself fantasizing and wanking more often than usual. It doesn't minimize discernment to the same degree as alcohol. There's no hangover other than perhaps a muzzy head or lassitude. This is with pot. A particular characteristic of the drug is that it can sometimes make you sleepy and dopey, and at other times keep you awake and refreshed. The latter case usually applies to marathon sex sessions, making it a very useful drug for that purpose. Oh, he goes on to talk about cocaine. Cocaine can be very effective as a fantasy stimulator, encouraging extra adventurousness and mischief. The naughtier, the better. Additionally, it's a tongue loosener that causes expression of the previously unspoken, which is beneficial for mutual fantasy exploration. Cocaine tends to promote an emotional detachment that was very useful for my new role as a sexual despot. It helped create imaginative new rituals and training methods to push us to wider boundaries. She also wanted these sessions when coked, so I was also took a fair amount, as it is quite difficult for a cokehead to relate to someone who is not. Coke increased her appetite for pain and degradation. On one occasion, I took so much that I became impotent. It was a fascinating sensation to feel all-powerful without an erection. Once the coke wore off a bit, then so did the side effects, aided by a spliff or two. I've continued to explore my fascination with domination, for which coke is utterly unnecessary. Nevertheless, I appreciate that it helped me on my way in the discovery of my sexuality. Still underway, he says. I would think that LSD, and I would like to speak to this one because I've heard of many friends who have taken LSD. How to describe the indescribable. On my first acid trip, my hand came across a tiny but smooth piece of grit, which I rolled between my thumb and forefinger, causing near-orgasmic sensations to pulse through my entire body in time with the patterns on the white ceiling. The first time I took it with a lover, sex on the floor whilst eating peaches and chocolate, smoking a spliff, being rocked by the gentle ebb and flow of the walls, listening to and seeing music, swatting at those annoying dragons. It was summer and there were flies. Laughing hysterically and painfully about nothing or everything, playing with a little oil-filled trip toy. Closely examining awe-inspiring patterns in the carpet that just wouldn't stay still and behave itself. Soft skin, gooey thrustings, warm breath, marine smells, pleasure through every pore, sensations magnified to enormous proportions, smelling colors, tasting textures, profound matters of life and death, distracting the mind from whatever has been happening before. Time stretched and shrunk. Sex everywhere and in everything for all time. Infinite energy pleasurably pumping out from the solar plexus and ravishingly raining down from the heavens. Life in inanimate objects. Beauty in mundanity. Total familiarity with complete strangeness. Love, laughter, life. Words fail me.
Wow.
That would be LSD. And I have to admit, I've heard this story from many of my friends that have taken LSD, that is exactly what happens.
I'm such a virgin to that.
So. Such exactly what happens. $5. Wow. Trim your mind. Anyway, okay.
Interesting.
What does Bianca say about her sex experiences? Sex and drugs.
Sex and drugs. They're a hit and miss set of experiences. Even by the most practiced, most relaxed individual can have a bad day or a quick trip through hell. Yet, it can also be an extraordinary, ecstatic experience. With meditations, you can open up the inner kingdoms and truly feel united with your partner. I would like to say to you, find a guide, but sadly, recreational drugs and sex experimentation is outlawed, and so is the possibility of teachers or schools. So for all you sex freaks who want to experiment with drugs first time, don't mix them. Don't take too much. Don't take them from or do them with strangers. You are in charge of you, and everything passes in time.
Very good point. Everything passes in time.
For me, I've enjoyed every minute of heaven or hell. Don't lose your sense of humor, or you'll find your way to, and you will find your way to some of the best orgasmic moments you'll have ever known.
Peak experiences. What does Ted say? What's Ted talking about here?
Cannabis is brilliant for sex. The perfect deconditioner before entering
the great ocean.
As a submissive, I find cannabis a wonderful way to promote. I'll stop doing my Keanu Reeves impersonation. I find cannabis wonderful to promote.
promotes fantasy scenes of mystery and imagination with a heightened sense of sensitivity and vulnerability. With every detail gains greater resonance? Cannabis encourages a sensation of both vivid actualities with a strange sense of being outside looking in at the same time. Inhibitions don't stand a chance. The same can be said for magic mushrooms. 10 or 15 helps reach the inner self without all the kaleidoscope of mayhem of LSD and very suitable for parties or clubs.
Magic mushrooms and alcohol go very well together. I've heard from my friends. Oh, you want to read from Pinkel Ann Schulgen?
Mm-hmm.
Describes sex on 2CB. You got to read this. Okay, go ahead.
Suddenly, he was climbing all over me. I felt myself gasp as his tongue took me over. My eyes closed and my mouth enfolded him. Inside my eyelids, I saw a blue sky. Behind an immense castle wall, there was knowledge of turrets somewhere to the right, out of my line of vision. I was standing in grass, and there were a few small daisies and lots of dandelions around me. The great wall appeared to be of mossy green, yellow, brown stones, and I felt quite small, child's size. There was a sense of familiarity, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It was my world where I lived. Then I remembered where I was in this life, what my tongue and throat were doing, and what a passionate touch was doing to me. I was on the bed of a man I belonged with, and who belonged with me, and we're making love to the humming sound of a little floor heater and the music of Beethoven. I like that. That's kind of sweet. It's more like love.
Except,
I mean, it's almost strange, fucked up way.
It was a passionate mouth, what his passionate mouth was doing to her.
Well, hopefully it was eating her.
Not the hand so much as the mouth.
Mm.
I think hands are great, mouths are better.
Mouths are really good.
Mouths are better. So I guess we're going to end this little hour of sex and drug use on Juicebox by saying if you're using drugs and finding yourself making bad choices of sexual partners, or you find yourself in situations without much understanding of the details or why you are where you are and with who, you may have a problem. So how do you know if you have a problem? Well, you have to ask yourself, are your friends telling you that they're worried about how you are with drugs or sex? How often do you use drugs while having sex? Do you have sex that is riskier than you really want to if you've been drinking or using? So you wake up the next morning and think, shouldn't have done that. Another question is, am I having trouble starting or maintaining the sort of relationships that I want? Or am I guilty, ashamed, or worried about what I'm doing? So these are some ways to know if you have a problem.
It's not a good sexual experience if you feel injured, guilty, or ashamed afterwards. If you think you have a problem, get help. Find a doctor or a therapist who's knowledgeable and non-judgmental about sexuality and drug use. You need to find a doctor who will help you sort and figure out what's best for you, not someone who just wants to run your life. Sorting out your choices can help you stay healthy and happy.
Yes.
So on that note, I think it's time for announcements.
There's some interesting stuff going on right now in this city. I think I'm going to specifically talk about this fabulous Real Woman Model Contest that's happening with Babs on www.babs.ca. Love Your Body. Basically, it's a Real Woman Model Contest. Have you ever dreamed about being a model, yet mm-hmm. you found the fashion industry is too frustrating or intimidating to try? Well, here it is, a model contest for women who of every shape, size, and age, brought to you by Babs Studio Boutique. And this is a new boutique opened by Babs of the famous Babs and Cara that used to do. Oh my God, my mind just went on a little.
Babs and Cara
from Burlesque. We were Sweet Soul Burlesque.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is Babs of Sweet Soul Burlesque Days, and nice. She has opened up her own
Caramel.
Fabulous. Yeah, she's opened up her own fabulous store, and whether you're a size 2 or a size 26, or whether you're aged 18 or 80. Babs encourages you, implores you to enter to win a fabulous array of prizes, including interviews with Pizzazz International Model Agency, Plus Magazine. There's an amazing list of people that are going to be giving you prizes.
I think everybody should be entering. I think that's fantastic.
Me too.
Because it's
awesome. Awesome idea. And she her boutique is at 2410 South Granville in Vancouver. Go to babs.ca and and apply.
And enter.
It's like four major categories. There's four winners representing the four major body shapes. There's the beautiful apple, the beautiful, amazing pear, the hourglass, and the inverted triangle. There's I see these these body types all the time. We all fit into one of those categories. And so
if we're women, yes.
If we're women, yes. Well, actually, there's some men, actually, that fit into them. Men tend to be this inverted triangle. It's kind of
That's true.
So what men tend to be. But I think that the majority of women are actually the pear. So so I think... really important that this is happening. I'm so in support of it. And please sign on and become one of Bab's models.
I think it's great.
And love your body.
Loving body love and being body. Empowering, if you want to get in shape for summer, you should check out Aradia Fitness. They've got an open house for free pole dancing classes on Friday night and Saturday all day. Yours truly will be teaching, and they're actually starting a bikini booty camp as well if you want to get in shape and embrace, you know. So the biggest loser is actually going to be winning a membership. So you start taking class and have some fun because, I mean, it's all about feeling really, really good. And when I say loser, I mean how many inches in terms of that, not weight or anything, because you can't really gauge that because muscle weighs more than fat.
But right.
We're not
Sounds good.
Be this, here next week, are we?
Yeah, we're not going to be here next week. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show. We think it's important. I haven't done a show on drug use in a couple of years, so I think it was important to slot that in, get a podcast out there for the world that Googles on sex and drugs, and they can find our podcast. So that was the information we wanted to supply to our wonderful listeners. And we're going to be back in 2 weeks, May 23rd. We're going to be doing an amazing show. Please make sure that you tune in. This show is going to be incredible. We're going to be doing, Caroline and I are going to be doing a speed dating extravaganza
at the eatery
just down the hill here.
Really good food.
And then at like 9:45, we're going to like run up the hill and basically like come on the air like super excited from doing this crazy dating. I've never done speed dating in my life.
Me neither. So we're virgins to it.
We're virgin speed daters. So we're going to do speed dating at the eatery on May 23rd.
So come on out if you want to meet us and you can pop our cherry.
If you want to meet us and pop our speed dating cherry, come and check out the eatery.
And write to us at Julia at Juicebox Radio or Caroline at JuiceboxRadio.com. Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned. Yes, tell us your experiences with the speed dating. Please do so we can read them on air in 2 weeks when we come back and talk about speed dating. So, hey, stay tuned for Hans Claus' Misery Hour with Marion. He's a very sexy man to be miserable with.
I'll let him guide you through the wee hours and this ambient collection of music and his super hot voice.
Thanks
for listening to Juicebox. We'll be back on May 23rd at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock.
You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening.